So this morning we're joined by Kerry Podmore, our local travel expert, to talk about all things holidays and travel. Good morning, Kerry. How's it
going?
Good
morning. Fine, thank you.
Good, good. It's very warm today.
It's lovely.
It's a lot warmer inside, actually, than it is outdoors. But we're going to talk about a couple of things this morning. So what have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to talk about, unfortunately, the failure of low-cost holidays, because I think that's quite a hot topic at the moment. And then I'm going to touch on a little bit about Tenerife and one of our top-selling destinations, a little bit about top tips for packing as well, and some unusual things to do while you're abroad. So a good mix of things to talk about this morning.
Okay, so you mentioned first of all the low-cost holiday group. So as I understand it, this is... Is it a travel company and has it gone into administration, or what's happened there?
Yeah, they're primarily a low-cost online player, and they did a package their own holidays. So they bought in low-cost flights and then twinned it with a hotel and a transfer. And unfortunately, on Friday the 15th of July, they had to call the administrators in after failing to find a buyer. Now, what we know about low-cost is that they moved their operation out to Mallorca. Now, it's quite interesting that they did that, because what that means is they then don't fall under the UK ATOL licence and the ATOL bonding. So subsequently, they then didn't come under any UK jurisdiction, and they actually come under the Balearic Islands. Now, some of the rules and regulations abroad are clearly very different to what we have here in the UK. And surprisingly, I mean, they're quite a big company, you know. The rumours are that they're worth some $700 million, so they were, you know, a big player. They had around about 500 staff, and it's, you know, in the travel trade, it's quite an unusual time for that to happen right in the middle of the peak season, because you've got sort of your summer balances in now, you've got your passengers ready to go. You know, you could kind of almost expect it in the quieter downtime, maybe the winter time, but at this time of the year, it really is quite unusual to call them in at this time of the year. So, you know, unfortunately, it's when it happened, there was 27,000 customers abroad at the time, and approximately 110,000 what we call forward bookings. So they're bookings that were made but hadn't yet travelled.
Right.
And the upshot of all of this is that, you know, it has been incredibly busy on the phones this week. We've had a lot of you know, very distraught customers. You know, they weren't a company that we deal with. Obviously, we're an ABTA and ATOL company, but unfortunately, some customers had put the trust in them, paid money, and unfortunately, it is looking like that money is kind of lost in the administration of the company. And what's come out of this is that certain hotels haven't been paid, so therefore they've cancelled rooms, transfer companies haven't been paid, and it has a knock-on effect on the flights and things like that. But the other interesting thing is, although that they package their own holidays, so when I talk about coming under the ATOL, that's where you buy the flight in, buy the transfer, the hotel, and you almost sandwich it together. They also bought off other companies, which is strange. So they'd also, although they had their own operation, they were also buying stock from other companies. Right. And unfortunately, they haven't been paid either. So that stock has been cancelled as well. And where the kind of tricky part of this comes in is if customers, you know, holidaymakers can make their own bookings online. We know that, you know, they can go away and do all sorts of things online. But what they don't realise is that they're not always protected. And what's happened is, certainly, you know, this week I've had customers that have booked, as an example, a low-cost flight with, say, EasyJet, which is non-refundable under any circumstances. They've paid for that up front. They've then booked the hotel through the low-cost group. Unfortunately, that part of the booking has gone. And, you know, we're unfortunately in a position where, in some instances, we haven't been able to find the rooms for these people. So some people have actually, unfortunately, got flights booked and are now struggling to get rooms. So it really has been, you know, a very upsetting time for everybody concerned. And, you know, part of the ATOL licence, and what that is it comes under the Air Travel Organiser's licence. And what that does is it protects consumers from losing money. And obviously, had they been ATOL, customers' money would have been protected. And when you book with an ATOL holder, you know, you should get an ATOL certificate straight away, and that's something that I would urge your listeners, when they're booking online, they're looking at this stuff, to absolutely make sure that they are ATOL protected, to make sure that something of this nature kind of doesn't happen again. Because, you know, there's some absolute horror tales out there at the moment, and some really distraught customers. And, you know, I would say whenever you're purchasing, always look for that ATOL license. It's sort of a black circle, and it says ATOL protected right through the middle. And, you know, just make sure that before you sort of press that button and you give credit card details in, you make sure that, you know, you definitely are covered. And, you know, if any of the listeners are worried about bookings that they've made, you know, online, and they think, are they ATOL protected, there is a website that listeners can go on to. Okay. If they Google it, it's an ATOL holders website. You put the company name in and it will tell you instantly whether they're, you know, listed or not. But obviously, you know, like I say, it's been very busy with people ringing in. Like I say, some have booked non-refundable stuff. And really, just in terms of what should listeners do if they have unfortunately booked with them, the website is saying customers claim off holiday insurance.
Right.
And in actual fact, holiday insurance in most instances doesn't cover for this kind of eventuality. So I would be very surprised if insurers will pay out. You can claim via the Balearic government, but the rumours are that the compensation, the bond that they had, is worth about €50,000. And when you're talking about a £700 million business, you can see there that, you know, the bond was just not enough to cover it. And the other thing to do is to make sure that customers talk to the credit card companies as quickly as possible if they haven't already done so, because some purchases may be covered on the clause with their credit card company, depending on what they've booked, how they've booked and how they've done it. I think what's happened is customers have kind of done a mixture of stuff. So they've done some stuff with the low cost group and that bit's gone. They've done other bits themselves online and that bit actually stays, because when you start packaging yourself, all of the elements aren't linked together. Now, the benefit of booking with an ATOL and ATOL protected company is that, you know, it's all, the whole lot is then bonded. So as an example, you know, when we've had companies that have gone like this in the past, it's all fully protected, and we would offer customers either a full refund if we can't find anything, or we'd find them a really good alternative, often at cost, and we swallow the cost. That's why being protected, that's what it's all about. So, you know, I would say that, you know, in terms of customers and what they can do, is just make sure that that ATOL protection is on every website they go on. You know, I've had tales of customers being asked to pay out in resort, which, you know yourself, you've gone on holiday, you've took enough money for your holiday, you're spending money, and then all of a sudden, wham, you get a big bill at the end. So, you know, the message is really, if you cut corners to save a few quid and you're trying to do stuff online yourself, you could get caught out if you're not using UK registered ATOL companies. You know, quite a sad week for quite a lot of customers, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you mentioned ATOL, but you also mentioned ABTA. So what's the difference between those two then? Should, well, if you're looking at holidays, should it be both?
The two of them. ABTA is like the governing body of all travel agents, and ATOL comes under the air traffic license. So ABTA covers sort of holidays, as in all the package holidays and all of that kind of stuff. ATOL kicks in when you start then packaging yourself. Right. And as an agent, we sell a mixture of the two. So we sell package holidays, and then we sell holidays that we actually package up ourselves. And when I say package ourselves, that's where we buy the elements separately. So we bring the flight in, bring the hotel in, bring the transfer in, and then almost sandwich it together. You know, and there is some great cost savings to do it that way. So we sell an awful lot that way, but obviously everything that we sell is totally protected, unfortunately, unlike what's just happened.
Yeah. So it's a thing that we keep coming back to every time you come in. It's do your homework, make sure that these people that you're buying your holiday from, you know, are in the UK, they're a bona fide company, they've got the right stuff on the, they might have the logo on the website, but like you say, check that ATOL website to make sure that's not faked and all this sort of thing. So really is buy beware and make sure that you are, you know, booking these things properly and
That's right. I mean, they did. When they moved to Mallorca, the CAA, which is the Civil Aviation Authority, actually issued a warning to say, you know, they have lost all of their atoll bonding. But I guess, you know, it's whether you've read that. Obviously, yeah. You know, many people haven't read it. And it was an odd move to move out to Mallorca. It's obviously been done for a reason. But, you know, sadly, you know, start the school holidays, it's peak travelling time. You know, the kids broke up on Friday. And, you know, the week before that, we've had this sort of happen. So it has been, you know, a distressing time in the office in terms of, you know, the type of very distressed calls that I've had from people that have booked elsewhere. Luckily, you know, the majority of them we've been able to sort out, get them rebooked and get them sorted out. So, you know, most of it has come to a happy ending in the end. But, you know, there's a lot of grief had to go on before we've got to that, which is upsetting for everybody.
Definitely. So we've been talking about some of the not so good news this week in travel. And then we're going to move on to something a little bit more interesting, a bit more positive, which is our top selling destination at the moment, which is Tenerife.
Yeah,
So we've been going on holiday to Tenerife, well, not me personally, but as I think as a country for a long time now.
Yeah.
And it's still popular. It's still there.
Extremely popular, Yeah, I mean, the beauty with it is it's all-round climate, so it's fantastic in the summer and fantastic in the winter. So anybody that's looking for some sort of winter, last-minute sun, the Canaries is ideal, and Tenerife is as good as any to head for climate-wise. So, you know, that's kind of why I think it is just so popular. And as I said last time I was here, you know, the Canaries has not come out of the top selling destinations now for months. It's still in there. It still hasn't moved and it's showing no signs of changing. So it is really, really popular. So, yeah, it is. It's a nice island.
OK, so what are the sort of things that that you do in Tenerife? I mean, me, I would get off the plane and just try and enjoy the sun and maybe sort of, you know, get on a sun lounger and read a book or something. But what are the sort of things that you can do in Tenerife?
Well, there's lots of things that you can do in Tenerife. It's actually a really good destination if you're quite active as well. So the big one out there is the Siam Water Park.
Right.
And for the listeners that haven't been out there, it's just been voted the Traveller's Choice Award. And it's actually been voted the number one water park in Europe. So, you know, it's a terrific accolade. And part of it is, you know, it really is for thrill seekers. So you've got things like the Tower of Power, which is a 28-metre vertical slide. So for those of you that are up for that, I'm not sure whether I would be or not, but it's a 28-metre vertical slide and you reach speeds of approximately 80 kilometres per hour. So it really is not for the faint-hearted, definitely for the adrenaline junkies. But that's really, really popular. The other thing that they've got in the park is the Indiana Jones style rapids. So that's where you all sit in big rubber sort of inflatables and you sort of kayak down the adventure,
really?
Which is like terrific. And there's some new things that they've done there. There's Singa, which is the first water roller coaster. So that does high-speed curves and it does something like 14 changes of direction throughout the ride and then finishes with an ascend of 18 metres per second. So that will give you some clue.
Yeah.
You've also got it in within the same part, the volcano, which is a dark tube ride where you actually fall down the volcano, which is supposed to be thrilling. I'll be honest with you, I haven't tried any of these. Loads of my customers have and said that it's terrific, but it really is for sort of thrill seekers. And I mean, there are other things for children. They're sort of a bit more tame, but they're kind of the big ones that you can do there.
Okay.
So they're always popular. And you've also got the Loro Park as well. And that's home to around 3,000 parrots. They've got sea lions, penguins, all sorts of other things as well. But the big one is the parrots and the parrot shows. That's always very, very popular. You've also got the mountains. So for listeners that don't know, you've got Mount Tidy, which is almost sort of in the middle of the island. So it separates the north from the south. The south primarily is where you've got sort of Playa de las Americas, Los Cristianos, those kind of resorts. Up in the north, you've got Puerto de la Cruz, which is more of a old-fashioned harbour, a bit more traditional. The hotels up that end tend to be a bit more traditional. The north of the islands tends to be much more greener. And for those listeners that aren't aware, that end of the island tends to be more cloudy because of the climate and because of the mountain, and it sort of draws the clouds in.
Right.
And the way the sun moves around the volcano, that north end tends to be sort of cloudy a lot of the time. Still warm, you can still get a tan, you can still be in your shorts and t-shirts, but it is a different climate up in the north to the south. And what you can do, which sounds, you know, absolutely terrific, is you can do these tours of the mountain. But the beauty is you can also do them at night. So
wow.
You can go up at night. Yeah, you go up on the cable car because it's got its own cable car.
Yeah.
Apparently, the views at the top are stunning at night because there's very little light pollution.
Yeah.
And you go up there, you have a three-course meal, and you kind of just look at the stunning view from the top. So that's always popular. There's a lot of like jeep safaris and things like that. They're always good fun, you know, always good to do. You can go across to La Gomera and do a little cruise over there. And there's also a Peter Pan whale watching schooner trip that you can do. And that's where they tell you tales of pirates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, which you know, is interesting to read, is that a third of the whale and dolphin species reside in the Canaries or cross through those waters at any given time. So it's ideal for sort of whale watching, dolphin watching, that type of thing. So there's lots of stuff to do around that, loads of sort of boat trips, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So they're all really, really popular. And I think, you know, in terms of the island itself, it's the largest of the Canary Islands. Round about the seven islands in the Canaries, and about 43% of the Canarian population reside in Tenerife. So that will give you a clue as to the size. And in terms of if listeners are not sure of exactly where the Canaries are, because it's a funny one, is it Spain? Is it where is it?
That's
I'm not
right.
quite sure.
Yeah.
It's about 300 kilometres off the coast of Africa. So that's where it gets kind of the most of its climate, the climate coming across from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we approximately have about 5 million visitors a year go out to Tenerife. So that will give you a clue in terms of the sheer numbers. And it's quite a rugged and volcanic island. So many of the beaches are actually black sand, which is quite unusual. And for those listeners that haven't been, I think there's a worry that, you know, all black sand and will it get all your clothes dirty and will my towels be filthy and all of that kind of
right.
stuff. It's not like that at all. It's just the sand is black. It doesn't give any colour off
or
anything.
Or
it's not dirty. It's come from the volcano. So that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the beaches do import their own sand, because naturally the volcanic sand will wash up. But, you know, some of the beaches are black, but it's an ideal climate. It's a great all-year-round resort. In terms of sort of the next few days, you're talking between 33 and 40 degrees, so lovely and hot out there.
Yeah.
And as I say, the popular resorts are sort of Playa de los Americas and Los Cristianos. They're more of a beach, sun, fun type resort. You've got Puerto de la Cruz up in the north, which is more of an old-fashioned harbour type.
Right.
And then really just in terms of sort of food and things, because people say, is it Spanish? What is it? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's kind of got a bit of everything, really, the Canaries. But primarily, one of their specialities out there is, and I'm probably going to make all the listeners hungry now because none of us have had our dinner yet.
No.
But the speciality is these little Canarian potatoes. And they're like whole roasted in the skin new potatoes, or what we would call new potatoes. And they're covered in salt. And they're actually roasted in the oven. And it doesn't sound great, but that I can tell you that the taste is absolutely, you know, superb. And the salt on the skin makes the skins go all crispy and really delicious.
Yeah.
And they serve that with a sauce called mojo sauce, which is like a pecan sauce. And that comes in three colours, because I've always wondered why, you know, when they bring them, you always get the three dishes and what's in each one. So they come in red, orange and green. The red one is primarily flavoured with paprika. The orange one has got hot chilli in it, so watch for that one. And the green one is primarily flavoured by coriander. And the sauce is used with the potatoes, but it's also used on meats, fish. Pretty much it's served with everything, if I'm being honest, when you go out there. And along with that, actually in the sauce itself, it's made with salt, garlic, olive oil and spices, so it kind of like zhuzhes up anything. So, you know, with the fish and the meat, it just gives it that little bit of a kick, and just sort of lifts the flavour. And in terms of sort of other dishes, because that's one of the big ones, and you'll see that on all of the menus out there. The other one is they do their own soup called Rancho Canario. And it's very, very popular. It's made with usually chicken or pork. You might find odd variances, but primarily that is what it's made from. And it comes with noodles, potatoes, cabbage, carrots. It's almost like a stew all on its own. And that's really, really popular. They do a lot of pan-fried fish out there. Very common is sea bass, parrotfish, tuna, that type of thing. Often pan-fried, or some of the restaurants will cook it on the griddle, on the actual barbecue griddle. It's usually fresh on the day, which is lovely. Meatballs, very, very popular, Spanish meatballs, and also battered squid, which is another delicacy out there. And in terms of sort of the tapas, because obviously tapas is very big out there, it's actually derived from the word tapar, which means to cover. And there's lots of things about, you know, was it put on to cover your drink so that flies didn't go in? Was it because, you know, the cafe culture out there is you stand up having your drink, so it's just easier to put the plate on top of your glass, so you've only got one hand carrying both things. There's lots of things that say what it actually means, but primarily the main thing is that it was due to going back many, many years ago when travel was very slow and exhausting. And the roads were extremely poor and the quality of the roads were bad, so people had to stop often, you know, to repair carts and things like that. And these bodegas or inns sprung up all over the place offering meals and rooms. And because the innkeepers or the bodega keeper and the patrons, the customers, couldn't read or write, they actually introduced this word, which means tapa, which means pan lid or cover, and actually that's how they did serve it originally, on a pan lid. Then it's gone into small little plates now that you get currently, that does actually sit on the top of a wine glass. But I mean, if you read up on it, I mean, it says that, you know, bar owners did it to try and sell more beer. They also did it because the quality of the wine was a bit not so great years ago, and if the wine had gone off, it meant that if people were eating food, they might not notice the wine had gone off. So there's lots of renditions of the tale, but the real story is it means to cover, so it is served on the pan lid.
Joining the studio this morning by Kerry Podmore, our local travel expert, and we've been talking about Tenerife and lots of lovely destinations, but now we're going to talk about the inevitable preparation for your holidays, and that normally it means packing.
Yeah, the worst part of it for some people.
Getting a really small case and 2 weeks worth of clothes and putting it all together. So to tell us a couple of things then, about the packing, because the thing that I always have to check and double check and triple check is how much you can take on in your hand luggage, and whether you need to be checking bags and how much it costs to check bags and all that sort of thing. So tell us a bit about the packing that we need to do and prepare for.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big one really, which I know sounds dead obvious, but loads of people, including me, haven't done this, is to actually know the allowance before you get to the airport. That is the big one. Lots of customers don't know their allowance, and just because they've flown with one airline last year, assume that that's the allowance with every airline, and, you know, really don't get caught out, because it can be really quite costly for excess baggage, as I know very well. So that's the big one to think, to check. And I think, you know, for those of us that have had that unfortunate experience of being overweight, you know, I've been at the check-in desk at the front of the queue, queued to get through, all of a sudden realised that the bag I'm taking is overweight, and I've actually had to then, in front of a whole line of people, offload clothes into other bags and try and disperse stuff. And I can tell you that the sheer panic and stress that you feel at that moment in time kind of just can sometimes spoil the rest of the flight. So I would definitely say the big one is to check. Many airlines for hand luggage now go off size rather than weight. So I often get asked, what's the weight? Well, some of them don't have a weight allowance, some of them have a size allowance. A lot of them have got these like grid things at the airport, like a, it's almost like a shopping basket to make sure that you've got the right size. So, you know, many airlines use that. Some airlines give you up to 10 kilos of hand luggage. Some are 5, some are 6. So everyone in that respect is different. And in terms of sort of what you can and can't take, the big one is this liquid business still, which is still kicking around. So any sort of gels, creams, any other kind of liquid which includes makeup is classed as a liquid. It has to be under 100 mil, so you can't take anything above 100 mil, and it has to be placed, if you're taking it in your hand luggage, in a transparent bag, because they will ask you to bring that out of your bag separately when it goes through the machines. And the reason for that is periodically they will check your liquids. I've had mine checked a few times. It's not a problem. What they do is they actually ask you to open the transparent bag, they take the liquids out, they spray it onto a little swab, and they put the swab in the machine to make sure, for example, if you're carrying perfume, they just want to make sure that it is perfume that's contained within the bottle. Mm-hmm. I would say definitely don't wait to the airport to then get your clear bags, because they charge for them. Right. And sometimes I've been there and they've actually run out of the clear bags and everybody's panicking. And I would say that sandwich bags, just your bog standard sandwich bag with like the top that clips,
zipper lock,
is probably the most ideal type of bag to carry them. But, you know, do make sure that your liquids are separate, because otherwise you're going to have to fish everything out. And you know what it's like at the airport, you've got a queue behind you, everybody's huffing and puffing, and it can be really stressful. So all your liquids in your clear bag, everything else in your hand luggage goes through the machine. And I would say that in terms of the liquid restrictions, it doesn't apply airside. So that's why you can buy your duty free. You can buy everything airside, liquid form, and not have to put it in your clear bag, because it's been authorised as fit for purpose. So that's the big one there. There's always a big debate about, should I buy a hard case, a soft case? Everybody's got the different opinions. I'm a fan of the hard case because I'm always frightened that things are going to get broken. But I think what I would say is that on the hard cases, just be really careful, because some of these cases can actually, you know, add quite a lot of weight.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, before you start. And if you're buying any sort of hand luggage bag, make sure that it has got the hand luggage approved sign on it. But I would say soft is good, because you can kind of squeeze a bit more in. And always put your heavy items just above the wheels. And that way sort of everything will drop down as the case is being moved about. And another tip I would say is shoes, which probably not so bad for ladies, because we tend to wear maybe flip-flops or whatever. But certainly if you're packing shoes, there's a space inside your shoe that really you should be using. So make sure that you put small items in there. I've packed jewellery before inside a shoe just to keep it all together. So that's quite a good tip. And I would say the real biggie, which does happen and we get it every year, is don't put anything in your checked bag. So that's a bag that goes in the hold that you really wouldn't want to lose. So that's things like cameras, medication, things that are really crucial to your holiday. And if there's a couple of you travelling, a good tip is to probably split the belongings between two cases. And therefore, if one does go missing, you've kind of got a bit of a backup. And also, there's these tag and track type luggage labels you can buy now. Really good idea. They've got like a microchip in them. Right. And that just makes it easier for tracking the bag should it go missing. And just really to sort of let the listeners know, don't really worry about lost bags, because everybody worries. I've been at the carousel and thought, oh my God, I can't see mine. Oh, where is it?
Yeah.
And actually, 85% of all lost cases are sent back to the recipient within 48 hours. Right. So that's a really good record. There's not that many that go totally missing. And I would say that when you've checked in, they always give you the little chitties off your luggage. They're like little stickers. Sometimes stick them on the back of your passport. Sometimes you stick them in the middle. Whatever you do, don't throw those away, because they are the tracking codes for your bag. And I have just had somebody that threw those away at the airport thinking they were rubbish. Fortunately, the bag's gone missing, and now it's like really difficult to try and track it, because that code is unique to that bag. So every bag has a different code. So that's a big one. I would say if, unfortunately, you do have a lost bag, you know, you do need to claim with the airline. It needs to be done in writing. And depending on the airline, the compensation rates are all different. So sometimes you actually might be better to claim off your travel insurance, right, as opposed to off the airline. But usually, as a rule of thumb, they may at least ask you to wait at least 7 days, maybe a little bit more. But if you do lose it on the way out, usually the airline will give you some sort of an allowance to go and buy some emergency clothes until the bag is reunited. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the bag is sort of found.
Yeah, it's it does seem strange that something that is so big can go missing. And sometimes, I mean, the stuff that isn't claimed, and sometimes you see this, you know, a solitary bag going round and round forever. They end up in auctions.
They do. That's right.
That's so strange to me that you've got a bag with a camera and your clothes and everything for your holiday. And for whatever reason, it goes and
just doesn't get picked up. I think sometimes it's if people are on connecting flights as well. So if they've gone on an onward ticket and that bag's got left there and they've gone.
Right.
So sometimes it's like, is it worth going back for it? So I think that's probably part to do with it. But the other good tip I would say is make sure that you use either ribbons or stickers on your case, because loads of cases now all look very, very similar. And I've had it myself where somebody's taken my case off the carousel. Luckily, I saw them do it and was able to, actually, that's my case, you know. Yeah. And if I'd have had like a ribbon or something unique on there, then that possibly would have stopped that happening. And I would say more probably for the ladies out there is if you want to avoid powders like eyeshadows and palettes and things cracking, if you lift the lid up and put one of these cotton wool pads on the top and then put the lid down, that actually stops the powder from cracking, because I've bought like quite expensive brand new powder only to get out there and find it's in a million pieces. So that's a good thing. Another top tip is to use scented drawer liners. So actually pack them throughout the luggage, and then it makes all your clothes when you arrive smell lovely. It keeps everything dead fresh. And ideal when you're bringing it back and it's all dirty to sort of keep everything smelling nice.
Yeah.
When you've got all your dirty ones coming back. And I would say the biggie, always pack a pen and a piece of paper, because you never know when you're going to have to write down a telephone number for something or something like that. And then the last top tip really is to try and pack multifunctional things, so like sarongs that can be made into a top, you know, shorts that can be worn in an evening with another nice top over it, dresses that can be worn during the day and then sort of jazzed up at night with a belt, or even some of these sarongs now and these sort of beach cover-ups, the top tip is to actually wear them back to front, and you can now put sort of a nice belt on and make it almost into a dress. So those would be my sort of top packing tips.
We're talking all things travel this morning, and we're talking about packing. And now we're going to have a look at some unusual things to do with our travel expert here this morning, Kerry Podmore. So we've been talking about Tenerife earlier, and lots of great activities, lots of things to do there. What are some of the more unusual, weirder things that people are doing on holiday at the moment?
Yeah, well, the big one or the popular one is rooftop walking tours. These seem really, really popular. So this is where you're attached to a zip wire, and you actually walk along the rooftops of buildings. So it's a great way to get a 360 degree view of the city, which is terrific. You're usually around about 140 foot above ground level. But the unusual thing is not only can you do it during the day, so you walk on all these famous buildings during the day, wearing a hard hat and attached to the zip wire, but they're actually now doing them in an evening. So you actually go up there during the evening, where you'll hear ghost stories, tales of murder, all really good stuff like that. And actually do an evening walking tour, and you know, the views on an evening with all the lights twinkling and everything. So they're really, really popular, being asked for those quite a lot. And quite an unusual thing is to visit a beer spa. This is in Austria. It's a great way to relax and pamper yourself, but you kind of soak in a pool of frothy brown beer. So you actually get into vats of beer, you soak in the beer, and it's in a brewery in Austria. It's opened as a unique spa. Beer apparently is very good for the skin. If you think about it, it's supposed to be good for the hair, so why wouldn't it be good for the skin? And equally, it's even good for you inside, because while you're sitting in the vat of beer, you can also order a beer and drink the beer while you're sitting in the vat of beer. So that's something a bit different. And there's also a new thing called volcano surfing. So again, this is for people that are adrenaline junkies, not for the faint-hearted. And this is where you actually surf down a volcano. So you go up on a 45-minute hike to the top of the volcano. You reach speeds of around about 50 mile an hour, so it's extremely swift. And you come down on what's like a small toboggan. And you know, it does bring a whole new meaning to kind of your pants are on fire as you're kind of coming down a hot volcano on a toboggan. But that's, you know, something new. And there's also what's called the cage of death. So we've all heard of swimming with the sharks in the cages and things like that. Well, this is a little bit different. This is in Australia, and you can come face to face with 19-foot crocodiles. So you get in this cage, which is 4 centimetres of acrylic, which to me doesn't sound a lot, but it obviously is enough. And you are submerged into the river or lake with these crocodiles. And actually they come right up to the edge of the acrylic, so you can see them, you know, really close up, which sounds absolutely thrilling. And there's also something quite unique going on in Lisbon. It probably won't appeal to anybody, but to everybody, but it is quite different, and it's a tour led by a blind person. So you go there, you're blindfolded yourself, so it allows you to take in the smells, the sounds, it allows you to use all your different senses instead of sight. You're given a fully sighted escort as well as but the lovely thing about it is that once you've paid to go on the tour, all the proceeds go to a charity as well. So it's a charity led project. And I think, you know, to walk around a city and get the smells and, you know, hear everything, it probably very different to what you would experience if you were doing it fully sighted.
That's right.
So that's quite unusual. We've also got, or just about to have had, is the biggest gathering of Father Christmases, which happens in July, believe it or not. It's in Denmark every year, and it's a short drive from Copenhagen. And this is the largest gathering of Father Christmases from around the world. And this has been going on since 1957, so it's been going on a while. Apparently, it's quite a spectacle to see all these Father Christmases in July. So that's something quite different. And there's also some singing trees that I've been hearing about. And this is where, in 1987, Cliff Richard planted a tree in Aalborg. And he planted it after a concert. And what they've decided to do is now let other artists plant trees. There's about 70 artists that have planted trees there. It includes people like Sting, Take That, Stevie Wonder, Rod Stewart and Elton John. And what they've now done is they've taken it a step further. So all these famous people have planted the trees, and then the trees actually now play the songs of that artist that's planted them. So as you do your walk around these trees, you're hearing all this lovely music wafting over. So that's something quite different. And then there's just two last things that I've been hearing about. One of them is helibiking. So this is where you're taken up on a helicopter up to the top of a mountain. You're dropped off with your two wheels with your bike, and then you mountain bike all the way down. And apparently this, you know, this scenery is stunning. It, you know, again, it's probably not for the faint-hearted. You need to know what you're doing.
That's right.
But, you know, something different. And then the last one that I've come across that I thought was really interesting, actually, and certainly pricked my imagination, it's called parahawking. And this is something quite new. And this is to bridge the gap between man and bird. And basically what happens is it gives you the opportunity. It's in Peru, and you fly in the thermals like a bird. So you're strapped on to obviously the right equipment. And what they've done is they've trained birds of prey to actually fly alongside you. So as you're gliding on the thermals, you've actually got birds of prey gliding with you. Wow. And it just sounds fantastic. So out of all of the ones I've just given you, that's probably the one that if I had the opportunity, I would do myself.
Definitely.